welcome to Finding You in a Vocal Therapy podcast. I'm very excited to welcome to the podcast today our special guest, Anthony Salerno. And Anthony is a therapist in our wilderness program and also comes to us with a wide variety of experience and knowledge, having worked his way up through the ranks in wilderness therapy. So I'm really happy to welcome you, Anthony, to the podcast today. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is an awesome opportunity and I appreciate it.
I'd like to start off with a little bit about the journey that got you here. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey to becoming a wilderness therapist?
Yeah. So my journey to wilderness is maybe a little different than most. I'll go back to undergrad. I studied architecture for undergrad, which is different than I think could have been the case. And for me, I had been successful growing up in high school and I was a competitive wrestler. And so when I got to college, that was a really big change for me. I went to Princeton and I went from feeling like one of the higher academic performers to feeling like the lower side of things. And that was a challenge. And then also my freshman year when I was wrestling, I got injured in one of my first matches. Mm. And so I felt like I lost some big pieces to my identity. And at that point, it would have been really great to get into therapy and I didn't. It's mm-hmm. taken me a lot longer to find my way there than I could have, but it's been a rewarding journey regardless. And while I was an undergrad, I studied architecture, but I was really passionate about this outdoor leadership and orientation program that we did for freshmen called Outdoor Action. Mm-hmm. And my freshman trip was eye-opening and it allowed me to connect with a lot of different people. And it was the first time I really experienced wilderness as this vehicle for change. Mm-hmm. You know, that's been one of the things that's guided my passion and interest in wilderness therapy. But at the time, I didn't know it.
Right.
But I was doing that for all 4 years that I was in undergrad, and just seeing how people can face challenges in that setting and overcome it and really lean on one another to move through the difficulties that nature provides for us hit something inside of me. After I graduated, I tried working in an architecture firm in New York City for a little bit, and that was stifling, I guess, to say the least. Everyone was kind of plugged into their devices and sitting in an office that was, if you know anything about architects, it's like everything's white or black. So everyone was dressed in the same color scheme. The office was really sterile for my taste. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I was like, I need nature. I need connection. I need humanity. And so then I kind of scrambled for a little bit to try to figure out what I could do next and found the hiring page for Entrada. And was like, oh my gosh, this seems like such a cool experience to be a field staff. I don't really know what that means, but it sounds like we get to be in wilderness, we get to help people, and we're participating in this process of like communal change. Wow. And so I just decided that I was going to make a pretty big pivot and packed all my things into a car and drove out to Utah. And it was on an orientation in the middle of February back in 2013 and have been with the company pretty much ever since.
Wow, that's a really cool story. How does your past experience as being a field instructor, I know you eventually made it to the mentor level field instructor, how does that impact and inform your work as a wilderness therapist?
I mean, in almost everything that I do, I'm thinking about kind of the staff side of things as well. So when I'm coming up with treatment interventions or I'm thinking about which families are going to come to the field on what weeks, I'm being really intentional with what staff are going to be in my group and what the connections will be between the staff and the families and the students. And it also instilled in me this desire for supporting development of our staff as well as our students. For me, one of the things that was really attractive about Evoke was the emphasis placed on staff development. Mm-hmm. Back when I said that I found that hiring ad for Entrada, you know, our support and resources provided to staff were like heads and tails above everyone else's. So for me, that really impacted me because I felt like I got a year to really develop into my skill sets as a senior staff. And then I then got to really focus on supporting new staff going through that process. And so as a therapist, I draw from some of those same skill sets to support our students and think about the like kind of cascade of assignments that I want that will lead them to the change that they're looking to make. And I'm doing that with my students and then also with staff, because I know the development process. I can be more intentional with what challenges I want them to be able to undertake and what they're ready for and how they might best support the group and the milieu.
I love that. I love it because it speaks to what I imagine is a great integration of all the aspects of wilderness therapy. What's your favorite, what are your favorite parts of the wilderness model? Obviously you've been doing this for a while, been working here for a while. So what are your favorite aspects of the wilderness model, and what do you find the most challenging in the wilderness model?
My favorite aspects. So in thinking about my training in graduate school, I was working in a community mental health center. So that was a big shift, because prior to that, I was a therapist assistant. So I was working with a number of our other therapists that are, some are still here, some have moved on. But one of the biggest roadblocks I hit early on when I was doing sessions in an office was like, wait, I don't have these natural tools to pull from. I can't go over to this cactus and use it as a metaphor. I need to rethink like what's around me in this office space that I can draw from. So thinking about what I love about being a wilderness therapist specifically, or why I, you know, prefer that now, is that there's, first of all, just so much to draw from around us in sessions. Like there's, you know, plants and natural elements that we can just talk about in the moment, and it's really fluid, and it lends itself well to exploring metaphor, in my opinion. And I think that beyond the like ability for me to draw from the space that I'm in for interventions, the model itself is unique in that I don't think I've heard about or read about any other therapeutic approach that so seamlessly blends individual, group, family, like all of that in one experience. And as a generalist right now, being more early in my career, it's fun to be able to pull from those different parts of my training and not necessarily have to specify or specialize in one specific avenue.
Mm-hmm. I always, you know, I'll tell you this, having done it for a long time later in my career, I love the generalist attitude because it's interesting, right? You get to draw on and have a heterogeneous group. And so you don't just have one population. We'll talk about your populations in a little bit, but I love that aspect of you that you bring to it. And the most challenging for you, the most challenging aspects?
I would say that the beginning and ends are often the challenges. And that's been the case even in, you know, the clinical experiences in a residential center that I was talking about earlier in my community mental health center. It's hard to end. I think that's always really tough. And it's the sweet spot that I think as a therapist, I'm looking to have my students get to where they don't need to be here anymore. And like for my own work, like being able to let go and support the next step and really have that be a successful transition. But it's not just, you know, the things that I'm experiencing, it's where my students are at and how they're feeling. They're like, wait, you know, I thought for weeks and weeks and weeks I was ready to go. Now I'm not so sure, like, this is comfortable. I like it here. And that C word, comfortable, is always a sign like, okay, like it's time for the next thing.
Right.
And for me, that was a huge part of my learning in grad school, because I was prior to that, just working as an assistant. So getting to follow the lead of the primary therapist and not have to make those decisions. But then in grad school, I was like, oh, okay, now it's on to me to know when is somebody ready. So that was a challenge there. And it's something that I'm still learning and growing through of being able to lead that closure, which is incredibly important. But for me, for the student and for the family, like creating this powerful wrap up and being able to summarize the work that's happened and create some motivation for the next steps, whatever that might be, that's always just a hard part. And I absolutely love when my families are able to send notes about how things are going, either at home or at whatever the next step looks like for that family. And I think the staff really enjoy hearing too. So getting some of that closure on our end, which back in the community mental health center I was working at, like when clients left, they left, and we didn't really get to hear from them, and that's just hard.
I remember you reminded me of the first group of students. You worked as a field staff before being a therapist, so you had more experience in the milieu. But I remember I came in as a therapist, and I remember when my first kids left, it was like a small example of losing a child. Like I was like, wait a second. Like I learned to love you and see you and be with you. And there was a real letting go for me. And so I can really appreciate that aspect of ending. And I love what you said about feeling comfortable. That's a kind of a sign or an indication that it's time to go. One thing I love about your model is, again, the integration. You have a way of kind of using the milieu, and maybe that comes from your maybe that's instinctive in you, or maybe that comes from being a Willer's therapist. You mentioned being an assistant also. So can you talk a little bit about how you've drawn from the therapists that you've supported over the years, how they've influenced and impacted your style, your approach?
I've been fortunate enough at this point in returning to Evoke, where I've gotten to shadow or support, due to vacations and things, every other therapist that we currently have at Entrada. Mm-hmm. So even when I was an assistant and supporting just maybe one therapist for a year and a half or more, now I've also gotten to come back with my graduate experiences to layer over what I'm seeing other therapists do and to be able to glean from their styles as well. But for me, my readiness or my feeling excited about grad school came on the heels of working with two of our therapists here, and just seeing their very different, unique styles and approaches, and figuring out like what mine was going to look like and, right. and which parts I was going to borrow. And I definitely fell in the middle of those. In one of the groups I was working with, it was more of the internalizers, the more like clinically complex students who can just implode. And right. the other group that I spent a lot of time in was kind of the opposite side of that. So students who were exploding, so to speak, and having a lot of oppositionality and defiance and getting in trouble with school. And so having that kind of full spectrum experience was powerful. Again, a theme of this discussion is like integration or like that, that holistic kind of mindset. But just getting to see some of the similarities and differences and knowing which interventions to use at what point has been really rewarding and powerful. And it helped me, I think, having that experience before going to school, because then, you know, intuitively I sort of knew what to look for or what to notice, kind of that way of being in therapy that we try to develop. Mm-hmm. And then grad school kind of layered over the technique and the theory and the names. So, it's very integrated.
I think it's such a great job to lead into being a therapist, because it's the one, you know, it's one profession where we don't get to watch a lot of people do therapy, and we don't get a lot of opportunities to have people watch our therapy and give us feedback. And so that role as a field staff, and then even more so as an assistant to a therapist, gives you an exposure that I think very few people who go into the field of therapy have. So I think that's super cool that you got to see that and draw upon that and see what fit and what you liked and what you didn't.
Definitely. Yeah. I'm nodding my head as you're talking. It's just, it was such a blessing and a reward. Like I would not have gained what I gained from grad school without first having the field instructor experience and then the therapist assistant experience. It made grad school way more fun, way more engaging than I think it otherwise would have felt.
Did you ever feel like in grad school that this isn't really important, but more of just a curiosity. Did you ever feel like it was a little bit boring because you had seen it and kind of operated in the therapist role, and so sometimes you were farther ahead than your peer group and your cohort?
For me, so I've definitely heard that from other like former field staff or former assistants that go there and they're like, yeah, like it's boring, and I totally understand what they mean by that. And for me, grad school to some degree was like a reauthoring of my higher education experiences. My undergrad experience was rough in a lot of ways. And so in grad school, I never felt bored. I was just like hungry to like learn and absorb. And probably some of my own stuff came out and I was like, I want to get straight A's and like do the best. And so I was pretty hungry throughout all of grad school. But the kind of on the flip side of being boring, like it felt really rewarding and exciting to be able to share these experiences with my peers. Like that's some of the drawing from my development experiences with field staff, seeing some people who didn't have those same prior experiences or understanding of like real-time therapy in person. It was like, here, I'm going to offer some coaching or some like insight into what this was like for me. So I think I was able to use those moments where maybe I would have checked out to kind of check in and just be really engaged.
Well, you also might have exposed something in me and in you that where you're maybe just a little bit more humble than the average person. So I may have stumbled upon that characteristic of yours, which I really appreciate. It makes me think of a question. When you're working with clients in wilderness therapy, how do you see yourself in them and them in you, either growing up or even today, the kinds of characteristics, the kinds of, just how do you see yourself in the clients that you work with and them and you?
I really appreciate that question. And it is something that I think subconsciously is just kind of bouncing around in my head a lot of, okay, like, yeah, I can step into their shoes right now and kind of understand or at least have appreciation for what the experience is. For me growing up, I was in a lot of ways bouncing around between different friend groups and social circles. I didn't have like my core group. Like I wasn't a jock or like the nerd or like, you know, the popular kid by any means. But I had a lot of friends in a lot of those different groups. And for me, what I did, I guess, in thinking about how it might be a little bit different from some of the clients I work with, I turned that internal and I just really withdrew into myself and was like, okay, like I need to work really hard to be the best at all of these things. And I felt like I lost a lot of potential social connection throughout my experiences up until college. And then when I got to college, I swung way in the other direction. I was like, all right, I made it. Like I did what I needed to do. Now I'm going to like explore all the things that I would say my current group of clients typically are getting into. But I think that core piece of struggling with identity. And then in college, like I said, my identity shifted, but then I also was interested in exploring the parts that I had neglected growing up. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think I can connect really well with those kids that maybe fall through the cracks or don't have an identity or still figuring out who they want to be and what they want to accomplish. So to connect that, like my current group of clients really fits in that sphere of people who, in my case right now, are more of the externalizers who are trying to connect maybe through like unhealthy influences or substance use or defiance or just pushing back against. And I think I went in the other direction potentially, but it's the same kind of dynamic we're talking about. So I resonate a lot with them. Mm-hmm. Maybe I went left and they went right, but I think at the core of that is this idea that, you know, we were really looking for connection and we missed that. And so I think it's powerful and it makes me look at my own like countertransference in some of those moments. But I really appreciate creating this group space right now where there's this diverse group of kids coming into the program who are desperate for that connection and maybe have all, you know, gotten in trouble a lot for using substances or that's created some family tension or they've had some school issues related to that. But at the core, bringing that group of kids together and it giving them some tools to communicate feeling and raw emotion has just been so incredible to be a part of and to facilitate. Because I think when they've been able to get at their feelings and then connect with each other on that base emotion level, I think they've touched on something new and maybe something that they've been seeking. And mm-hmm. and that's created a lot of momentum and motivation for growth and change.
And can you speak a little bit about your experience, your exposure to this work and how it informs your work with parents? Because as we all know, that's a huge part of this job is supporting and facilitating the parents' process through this journey.
I think I'll start by talking a little bit first about my connection, I guess, with the role of being a parent. And to start off by saying I'm not a parent yet. Mm-hmm. But I think from the time that I don't even remember, for as long as I can remember, honestly, I've wanted to be a dad. And mm-hmm. and for me, that's been something that even beyond being a therapist or like having a specific career, like being a dad is something that I put as like, that's my life goal is to be a dad. Mm-hmm. To help my children grow up and to be a part of, to be able to tap into that experience. And mm-hmm. In my current role, I've worked with hundreds and hundreds of families and parents and seen their triumphs and their struggles and the connection there. And that's just, if anything, fanned the flames of, you know, I really want to be a dad. I want my turn at this. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, in the past, I've heard you talk about like there's strengths to being able to be a parent in relationship with other parents as a therapist. And there's also so challenges of that because, you know, I have worked with parents on calls where they've expressed like, well, how do you know? Like, how can you know what this is like? And the straightforward answer is that I don't. And I've heard these stories many times, and that gives me a lot of empathy and understanding. And oftentimes for parents, it's just helpful to hear like, yeah, you're not alone in that. I can't connect with you in this way, but you know, I've experienced that with other families that I've supported over the years, and this is what it was like for them, and this is what helped, and this is what was challenging in those situations. So being kind of like the story keeper without having the lived experiences myself yet is super rewarding. And I wouldn't have gotten that without, you know, working with another therapist who is a dad of five kids and hearing his responses to parent questions and having an empathy and a care for what that might be like to hear as a parent in crisis or in those moments of extensive challenge. So when I get those questions, you know, I think it's important to honor the fact that I'm not there yet. I'm not in that position, in that role. I don't have my own children, but I do have lots of experiences and other stories that I can reflect back on and share. And I know this is sliding a little bit away from your question, but I recently wrote a blog about support groups and the importance of parents having a community to have these connective moments. And the parents that I do work with that do attend those, I think are really touched and connected when they see other parents in a similar, if not like the same position that they are, because there is a whole lot of merit and value to that. And I think when I do experience parenthood for myself, that'll make me develop into even a stronger therapist.
There's a quote that I read some time ago that says there is such a thing as a perfect parent. They just haven't had children yet. And I always laugh about that because I think we can relate to that kind of judgment before the experience. But what you just shared was so beautiful and just the opposite of that. My favorite part of what you just said was when you were going through that response when somebody says you don't have a child, how do you know? And you say, I don't. I think that that's what so many people are looking for, is for us to be able to reach out to them and to connect with them. And then when we don't have the experience, that we can be authentic. And I just think that's a beautiful answer. Thank you for sharing that. You know, I think COVID has changed all of us in so many ways. Has that impacted your clinical lens or approach to wilderness therapy?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. COVID has definitely influenced the way that I approach therapy now. When I was in grad school, half of my experience was done telehealth, and that had a lot of challenges in and of itself to figure out for myself, for our faculty. I think it was a learning process for the world in a lot of ways. But one of the things that I was conscious of during that time was the logistics of a lot of the therapists at Entrada. You know, we do our weekly calls with families, and so we're not getting to read body language in session and be able to support parents and notice those moments where emotion might be coming up in person in a session. And in grad school, I had a lot of experience trying to listen and detect that on a phone call with somebody. And that was way harder, as you could imagine. But it, you know, there are some subtle things that you can notice on a call. And I think that's helped me be more present and aware for the emotional material that comes up on our parent calls each week.
Right. I agree with you. I love doing telehealth phone calls. I mean, I love if people want FaceTime, if people want Zoom, that's perfectly fine also. But for me, when I'm on a phone call, doing a parent phone call or doing telehealth over the phone, it just requires me to listen even better than I would normally listen. I love that aspect of it. I think that's when I tell people that we do, you know, parent coaching and parent therapy over the phone, which is kind of what we do when we're doing parent phone calls. They're always like, that would be so hard over the phone. And I'm with you. It feels there's a different kind of attention that is required that comes to you when you're doing that version of coaching or telehealth. I love it.
Yeah. And I think for me, while in grad school, even there were a number of clients that had the opportunity to do like Zoom calls or like video calls. And a number of them didn't want to. And it works better, I think, for certain people to not have to have the intensity of seeing somebody engaging their reactions. So yeah, I've definitely pulled a lot from those experiences to support me in the role that I'm in now.
I think it can make some people feel a little bit safer. It's a little bit safer because, you know, we're talking a little bit of theory right now, but clients, when they do it over the phone, they maintain the right to expose themselves more consciously, right? They're not as exposed in that process. And so as people that are listening and they're thinking about, would that be of benefit? I think if you're a little bit anxious, if you're a little bit nervous about the experience, I think that phone call version of it gives you as the client a little bit more control about how much and what you disclose to the therapist, which is a benefit.
Definitely.
I love this question to ask our therapists. Can you share an intervention or an assignment that you found to be particularly meaningful in your work?
So I have two that jump out, and one came before grad school, and the second one sort of developed through getting kind of the clinical, like science-y side of therapy, not just the art of therapy. And the first one that I really attached onto was something that I've seen one of my mentors do a lot of, which is family sculpting. Mm-hmm. And I know in your work, you've done a lot of trainings and coaching around psychodrama. And so it's not mm-hmm. quite psychodrama, but it's tapping more into like art and creative expression. And when I think about my students, the ones I described earlier on our talk today, they're really needing to access that emotional component. A lot of them are really good at, I'll be playful and use like the word wordsmithing. Like they're really good at talking. They're really charismatic. And sometimes it's just about breaking them out of what's comfortable and getting to that place of discomfort and having to build something to represent a dynamic and not talk about it and have that silence really be the teacher in some of those moments. So I love doing that, especially during parent visits when we can do some family sculpting together. And this past week, yesterday, actually in the field, one of my students had a parent visit and they seemed a little anxious, escalated. They were clearly dealing with some feelings and weren't able to put words to it. And I just shook things up and was like, hey, we're going to sculpt, like, let's try this. And almost immediately they had this like burst of emotion and were like, oh, this is going to be awesome. And it really like spoke to them and mm-hmm. got them to use their language, but by building a construction of sticks. And that led to this really powerful metaphor between the student and their mom and how they kind of came together in this moment and were able to look at what some of the challenges were in the past and literally kick through them and reach each other and talk about this really intense thing that they've carried around for years. So that's one of my favorite, and that's definitely something I've borrowed from other therapists, going back to an earlier question of yours of do I use things that I've learned? And yes, mm-hmm. But then in grad school, learning more about different therapeutic techniques, I found myself bringing in a lot more scaling questions and trying to help kids look at if they're anxious, like let's measure your anxiety on a scale of 1 to 100 over the course of the week. And then we'll have this graph that we can look at and talk about what was leading you to spike in these moments, what was helping you de-escalate and become less anxious. And are there common themes? Are you anxious in the mornings all the time? Is it in the afternoon? Why might that be the case? So it's just bridging in that science side of things, being able to use like data and numbers and move to incorporate that with the emotional work that's happening has been awesome. And I've really appreciated that.
You know, one thing that comes through, Anthony, is your passion. You know what I mean? Like you're willing to kind of, I always love whenever I'm working with our therapists or our staff, when people challenge what I'm saying, when they ask difficult questions, when they kind of bring up counterexamples to see how I would respond. And you're capable of doing that. And that, in that context of what I just said, like what comes through in your answers and your discussion is your passion. I also know one of the things I pay attention to is when I want to talk, when I want to ask lots of questions. Like I could go on for a long time with you talking about that. And to me, that's a sign that the person I'm talking to is present and believes what they're talking about and it's real. And so I just wanted to share that with you and tell you how much I appreciate you for that characteristic and really who you are and what you bring to this work and to our children. They're lucky to have you. We're lucky to have you.
Thank you. Yeah. back, like with you too, it's always fun to like get me thinking about things and be like, how do I feel about this? Or like, what might I say? And I love those times when we're able to have coaching and supervision and connection. And we worked a couple shifts together too, back right. in the day.
Yeah, I remember. Well, Anthony, one of the questions I like to conclude with is self-care, because it's a challenge for every single human. Mm-hmm. So I like to ask, what do you do for self-care, and what are the challenges for you in doing that self-care? What gets in the way? What blocks? What prevents your self-care at times?
Self-care is definitely something that's still evolving for me. Mm-hmm. And it's something that was a big theme in grad school, was making sure that we had our boundaries and self-care in place. And I think that was helpful to project onto what I already knew about this job would be challenging and difficult. Mm-hmm. One of the other ways COVID impacted me was board games. Right. My partner and I like play a ton of board games together, and it's just that in and of itself is really filling, and it's fun to just connect and not be on devices, but just be really present with each other doing the shared activity. I think COVID was hard in a lot of ways, because it was like there's lots of screen time for me, and it was right. something I wanted to get away from. And during COVID, I was in a city, so it was hard to get into nature. But being back in Southern Utah, I have a lot more opportunities to get out and play outside and hike and camp and backpack and do the things that I love, that I think drew me to wilderness therapy in the first place. So it's mm-hmm. I'm still doing a lot of that, but I'm also finding ways to connect with myself and connect with my partner and take time to be present and really try to take some space from the deep therapeutic work that can happen day in and day out, and let myself recharge so that I can be fully present with the people under my care.
Yeah. I think that's a challenge for everybody.
So yeah, Brad, one of the things that kind of what you just said brought up for me was an opportunity that came up this past week with one of my supervisors and mentors and friends here at Evoke. We got to engage in some therapeutic cross training is what we're calling mm-hmm. it. And essentially, this is a person who I got to assist for a number of years, and not quite a role reversal, but he came out and he was doing a lot of the things that I had been doing in the past, supporting me, like kind of taking notes on different things while I was like leading and guiding a session. So in a number of ways, that was just a really cool, exciting experience overall. Having that full circle moment of like, okay, like, yeah, now I'm in the lead seat, and that feels really good. But then also just touching back on the idea of mentorship and feedback and growth, like he provided me with a ton of feedback and a ton of realizations of like what my clinical presence looks like. And he used the word mm-hmm. Like setting the table. And that wasn't something that I really recognized I was doing. Mm-hmm. But when I was in session doing a lot of, hey, we're going to come back to that, or, you know, we're going to be talking about this for the next couple of weeks, and just creating some guideposts for my students to really think about how therapy was going to look and evolve and move over time. And it was helpful to have that perspective of how maybe like do some education around what therapy can be in the middle of therapy. And that wasn't something I was aware of, but yeah, really cool opportunity.
You know, Anthony, just listening to you today, I think you're the poster person for wilderness therapy because of all the experiences that you've had. But I think you speak so well to the therapy that happens in wilderness therapy at Evoke, because I think when people think about wilderness, they think about the milieu so much, which makes sense because it's so powerful and unique. But you're describing a really intentional, really thoughtful, really conscious, really dynamic version of therapy that I think probably the average person underestimates or doesn't see. And so I really appreciate you bringing that to the table and bringing that every day in the work that you do at Evoke. And again, like I said before, it's just an honor to work beside you and to watch, to learn, and to experience you as you show up.
Thank you, Brad.